All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast. My name is Tom, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. March 9th, 2021. It is Tuesday. Good morning. So it's been a bit. Had to take a bit of a break. One, I had to find, problems to talk about. I'm not having a lot of problems. Life is pretty good. I'm getting bored with the same old, quarantine and vaccines and masks, and that same old topic is boring. And so I just had to take a little break and see, I had to remind myself, as a person of recovery, as great as I think I am, I still struggle. I may not want to buy a bottle of vodka and drink it, but, I still have an ego, pride, all that shit that, it plays a role for some things. But there's other things that it can be a distraction. And, I started doing this podcast because I wanted to share what my life was like after I got sober. Because the picture that I paint, or the picture that is painted, is that sobriety leads to happiness. Or actually, nobody ever even said that. Nobody actually ever said anything. I just assumed. And, and they're right. Or it is right. You put down the drink and life does improve. A lot. But that other part, that the 12 steps, the program, you honestly do not need any sort of program to quit drinking. A good black eye, crash car, inappropriate behavior, those are usually enough to put the drink on the shelf for a bit. It's just trying to keep the drink on the shelf. And that's where programs come into place. But, a lot of the times we are not here for the program. We're here just to, speaking for me, I showed up just to get people off my back, to avoid embarrassing conversations. I've always been good at that, shucking and jiving, getting away, avoiding. And that's kind of what happened when I got sober. It wasn't like you show up at the welcome center, good morning, welcome. So you have a drinking problem. All right, well, it was a punch in the face at a bar, hiding at a hospital, and then a temporary sponsor. That was the welcoming committee. And you just hope and pray that you surround yourself with enough people to think for you. Because honestly, when I came into the program, I couldn't really think a clear thought. It was clouded by self. It was clouded by what I'm not getting. It was clouded by ego. All that, look how great. As soon as I quit drinking, I became amazing in my own mind. So, it's a fucking crazy group. So all you can do, fingers crossed, is hook up with a good group of people in a program, whether you want the program or not, to guide you to hopefully a better life. It's tough. And this, sharing and I don't know. But I thought I would talk a little bit. I'm going to share a little story this morning. And I don't know where you live, but vaccines are going on, right? And you hear, or I've heard on the news about, vaccines getting thrown away, blah, not being able to be used. And they're like, if you can get it in an arm, get it in an arm. Don't let it go to waste. And but I am not 65, 52. So, and I'm a super supporter of, get everyone over 65 vaccinated first. And I'm fine with that. But as time's gone on, more people are getting vaccine. More people are getting vaccines that are under 65. And I, you know, you hear about it. You know, I know one person that got theirs and posted it on Facebook. And I was like, God, you know, I had an opinion in my mind. And I'm not going to share the opinion, but it was not very good. You know, very critical. And I don't know if that's critical because I actually believe that people over 65 should get their shots first, or I'm critical because I can't get mine. And I'm thinking it's more of the first one because honestly, I haven't been that consumed or obsessed with the idea of getting the vaccine. I feel pretty good. I have yet to have a scare. You know, knock on wood. I know that the virus is real. A good friend of mine, just saw him yesterday. He was in the hospital for 10 days with lung problems. So I was, you know, that was really scary. And he's a good friend of mine. And so I saw him yesterday and I was like, God, I was worried about you. So I know it's real. But for whatever reason, we've just, I guess, done all the right things because we haven't had anybody. My mom had it, but she was in a nursing home. But my father, everyone in my circle of family and friends, nobody's had the COVID virus except for one person, my sister-in-law, who was a nurse, and she got it early on. And it was it was a tough one for her, but she, you know, she's okay. But for the most part, we've been fine. So it's not really been on my mind. Well, yesterday, and I'm going to keep this super anonymous because I really, you know, I barely even want to talk about it, but it's something that I'm going through. And, yeah, and I think I just want to just share it because it really exposes my ego and you know, my righteousness at times. So, you know, like I said, I was very, you know, looking down my nose at anybody getting their vaccines before their time, you know, finagling their way, maneuvering their way. You know, all of a sudden certain people become frontline workers and some people who wanted to be frontline workers didn't want to work. You know, it was just a lot of me having opinions about stuff, which I shouldn't. You know, it's none of my business. Well, so yesterday we find out that there is a doctor's office doing the vaccines and they reach out to a person close to me and tell them that they're doing vaccines tonight and if they have extra, meaning they take care of all the people that they have scheduled for appointments to get their vaccine, if they have extra, would we be interested? And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I think maybe like all of, I don't know, I shouldn't speak for all of us. I know that I was a little skeptical, a little nervous about it. I don't know if that's because I'm nervous about it or because I can't get it. It's just a great face to have. But I was a little nervous. And so I hear from this person, they're like, yeah, if they have extra vaccines, instead of throwing them away, they're going to offer them to people. And they've offered them to us. Would you be interested? And I was like, sure. You know, I mean, if it's between getting the vaccine and it going into the trash can, I'll take the vaccine. But, you know, behind in the back of my mind, I'm like, they probably won't even call. I'm sure they have plenty of people that want to get the vaccine. Well, I tell you what, 8:30, the phone went off, and they said, listen, if you want to get the vaccine, come on down. And we did. We went down, and they had 12 extra vaccines. And we got our vaccine. We got our first shot. And I felt kind of guilty. And I was telling a friend of mine, you know, if this had been the beginning of the vaccines, I wouldn't have done it. But a lot of people that I know now, especially over 65, have started getting their first and second shot. My father's had his second shot. Most of the people I know have either at least gotten their first shot and have the second one scheduled. There's one lady, a client that I know, who has not had any luck getting her vaccine. So from the doctor's office last night, because he said we're going to have some extra for tomorrow. Do you have some people that you know that might want to get, you know, and it's, you know, we consider nurses and school teachers like frontline workers, but, you know, there's a lot of people, if you have a small business, you're a frontline worker. You're dealing with people. And so at this point, you know, we're all frontline workers. But I called her last night. I said, you know, hey, I can get you a vaccine if you want to get it in the morning. She said, I'm already scheduled for BB on Wednesday. I've confirmed. I said, okay. I thought of every person that I knew that might not have had it. I couldn't think of anybody. So I called a couple other friends. And, you know, we all got our vaccines. And we were talking about it this morning. And I'm like, you know, you know, we definitely waited. I don't know. I feel like the tide is starting to turn. I think the vaccines are really starting to flow in. People are getting vaccinated. They said that they want everybody, I think, vaccinated by June. So that's March, April, May. So 2.5, 3 months. Yeah, it was, I don't know. Has anybody else gone through this? It's a little bit of a, it's kind of, I don't know, man. It's, you know, you don't want to be selfish, you know. And I, like I said, I don't think we have been. I think we've been fine. Honestly, until we heard this yesterday, I had no intention. I didn't really even care about the vaccine. But then when we found out we could get it, after everybody that was supposed to have gotten it did receive it, and there were extra, we got it. And I tell you what, it kind of feels kind of good to be part, at least in the first shot, of getting the vaccine. Days of our lives. So anyway, that's my confession. I've shared it. Don't judge me. I hope we all get vaccinated. I hope we get through this issue that we're going through and kind of. But what do we, you know, have we learned anything? I don't know. A lot of people have opinions about what they figured out, and I don't know. Yeah, so like I said, I took a break. You know, I had to get a step back a second and remind myself, you know, what this podcast is about. And this podcast is about sharing my life after putting down the drink. And sometimes I'll find myself giving advice, and I don't want to. I find myself telling people what they should do. I don't want to do that either. I'm not here to tell you. I'm not here to give you advice. This is about what I did and what I continue to do. And, you know, I shared the other day about that cuss can and how annoying it was to me. And, you know, it's a great example of either me just saying, you know, whatever, or at what point is it important that I point something like that out? And I had a guy come in that I cut his hair, and he's part of the program. And I said, listen, man, what do you think about this cuss can thing? And he agreed, you know. It is, it's not part of the traditions. It's not requirement of a meeting. So he agreed. Am I going to do anything about it? No. Because, you know, it's tough. You know, it's tough to go to meetings. It's definitely tough now. You can't really get to a meeting. But hopefully we'll get back to getting to some meetings. But prior to this, you know, it's tough to get to a meeting, especially when you have 11, 12, you know, I've been doing this for almost 25 years. But at the end of that, it's hard to find meetings routinely that you want to go to because, you know, it was easy in the beginning. I had nothing. I had no life, no friends. You know, that was me basically being reborn. I came out of that BB hospital basically a newborn. Life that I had known up until that point was over. Going to the liquor store, that was over. Going to the bar, that was over. Drinking and driving, that was over. You know, big, giant, drunken mishap surprises, that's over. Apologizing for my behavior because I drank too much, that's over. This is a new life. And it's almost like, can you imagine being born without a parent? You know? So coming into the program early, getting that temporary sponsor, it was like having a family. And I had nothing else to do. I was working. I still had a job, so I would work. But after work, I had nothing going on. So it was easy for me to, I mean, I would probably do 5, 6, 7 meetings a week. I had nothing else to do. But you get better. You know, you get a girlfriend or a boyfriend or whatever, and you have relationships. And then that starts exposing some of our sides of shit that we need to start addressing. But we didn't come in for that, right? We came in because we just got caught. But that's where you start to find out about that program. And take it or leave it. I would definitely suggest to take it. You know, I've been watching a lot of Gordon Ramsay. I love Gordon Ramsay. And there's like the evolution of Gordon Ramsay. I love like early Kitchen Nightmares. In the UK, where he's just this young, I think he had 2 Michelin stars, early chef, compassion. Americans hadn't gotten a hold of him yet. You know, pain in the ass. I mean, there's a great documentary on Gordon Ramsay. I think it's on YouTube. It's probably on Netflix. Maybe called The Boiling Point, something like that. It's so good. And you watch a guy like Gordon Ramsay, and he's hardcore. He can be cruel. He's tough. He's mean. He can be physical. He can grab you. I mean, and this is filmed in the UK, I don't know, probably 20 years ago, I would imagine, if not 25 years ago. Life was a little different then, you know? I don't think if he put this show out, like we were watching an episode the other day, and he, you know, I was watching that documentary. And at one point, he grabs one of his chefs. He's like, you donkey, you donut. You know, he's like yelling at him, you fucking idiot. You know, brutal. I mean, the guy's like, you know, he clearly wants a career in cooking. So you're going to put up with this shit. But at the same time, they get better, right? Gordon is so abusive and so hardcore and so tough, they become better. And he's that kind of guy that carries that aura about him, makes you want to be better. Now, I'm sure they're motivated because, you know, if you work under a chef like Gordon Ramsay and you're in that kitchen world, that kitchen life, cooking and chefing, you know, that's it's a great thing on your resume, you know, sous chef or whatever, cooking under Gordon Ramsay for whatever at his restaurant. So, you know, you have to do what you have to do. You have to grind. You have to get your beatings because, you know, on the other side, it'll be worth it. And he's inspiring, you know. And you go, oh, my God, he's so hardcore to these guys. You know, he's so mean. But these guys, when it's all said and done, his fucking kitchen runs like a goddamn Rolex. And then he goes into these shows and he does these, you know, especially I really like the older ones where he was less mean. I mean, he was honest. He was abrupt. He was a bit Krause. Was that the word? He's not. He's pretty nasty. But at the same time, you want to be better for a guy like that. And if you can find somebody like that in the program, you know, it's tough, but you grow. And, you know, whether it's a temporary sponsor or whatever it is, or even that relationship with the higher power, you know, they say in the beginning, it talks about how you can, you know, make a doorknob your higher power. But when you find somebody that inspires you to be better at, and it's funny because coming into the program, everybody inspired me, right? I was so down in the dumps that I wanted, you know, everybody, look at how this guy is just not drinking. He's got a job. I want to be like that. Oh, look at this guy. He's not drinking. He owns a business. I want to be like that. I mean, I was so at the bottom, I wanted to just be better everywhere. But if you can find somebody, you know, and I, you know, I always talk about my buddy Matt, who's gone. You know, Matt was like that. You know, he wasn't cruel to me, but he was really honest. And he'd tell me, you're full of shit. And it would hurt my feelings, or he wouldn't answer the phone, and it would hurt my feelings. But his lifestyle, his sobriety, his, you know, him being an example inspired me to want to be better. He was like kind of in a weird way, like a higher power. He had power in his positive behavior. So, you know, you start off with a doorknob, and that's easy because the doorknob doesn't talk back. It doesn't question or judge you. And then you move up to like a temporary sponsor, which was like Ron. And he was just, you know, he wasn't early sobriety. He had a lot of sobriety, but he was still the guy in the trenches. You know, because 9 out of 10 guys, once you get some time, your life gets better and you come out of the trench. But then you have these guys that are still like with a bunch of time, grinding out a bunch of meetings. Probably not, you know, I don't know why, but for some reason they're still in there. And, you know, that's like a Ron M. who was there and took me to a meeting every day, you know, with 15, 20 years of sobriety, still taking newcomers to meetings every day. And he was inspiring. And then you have a Mike R., who was my second sponsor, who was, you know, he had his just a couple meetings he went to, and but he was, you know, had a lot of time, knew the big book, and was a great person to kind of go through in my first year, that big book. Oh, yeah, yeah, writing it all down, honestly going in one ear, out the other, one eye, out the other, not paying attention, really still trying to be, really still trying to appear better than I am. And I think that's where Mike R. was. You know, that was my second sponsor, and I wanted to do everything. And I remember being at a meeting and really liking what he had to say saying, I'd love to, if you were my sponsor. And he goes, well, do you have a sponsor? And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, you need to let him know. And I was like, oh, I don't want to hurt his feelings, right? Me, right? Self. And he's like, he doesn't care. I'm like, what do you mean he doesn't care? And he didn't. And I told him, he's like, that's great, man. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not here. You know, I don't own you. Just here to be, to take you from one point to the next. And this is where we step off. And so I got, you know, involved with Mike R. and really started working the big book and not having any clue, and would later, you know, have to revisit the whole big book again, or the 12 and 12. But going through you know, my relationship, my sponsorship with him, and then moving, and then, you know, realizing that it was all a big facade. It was a lot of yesing and knowing and yesing and yesing and sounds good and going to meetings, but at the same time, not really changing much. But I don't really think I was supposed to. I think I was right on the right path. Moving to Easton, and then, you know, that, the lack of being anchored into a program and really working the steps was exposed that I wasn't really anchored at all. And I've shared it. Didn't like the way the meeting was run. Didn't like the way they collected the money. Didn't like anything. And the next thing you know, I got drunk. And couldn't quit. Drank that day and could not stop. And that was an eye-opening experience. I was like, wow. So when they talk about the gift of sobriety, it is really, it's a gift. And if you give the gift back, you can't have it back. It just doesn't show up as easy as it did the first time. Because by now I'm thinking, oh, I'm just, I get the gift because I do all the work. No, you got the gift because you got punched in the face. You were humiliated and embarrassed and ashamed, and that's when you became available. All that self has returned, laying in the high weeds, and just when I wasn't expecting it, pounced on me. Finally, you know, drinking and going, losing my first wife and basically losing everything and checking into that rehab up in York, Pennsylvania and coming back and then finally finding my buddy Matt. And he would teach me like Gordon Ramsay. Very, you know, and I only say that to a way, in a way that I wanted to impress him. And his way that he taught me would expose that from me. Call me every day. I'm thinking he thinks I'm important. He's thinking I'm not going to call at all. And I started calling and not answering, and I've shared this, you know, but it exposed what a self-centered fucking asshole I am. What a little victim I am. And he would say shit to me that would just fucking wreck me. I remember him inviting us over for dinner. We're going to have dinner on Friday night. You guys want to come? I go, I have to work. Can we do Saturday? And he goes, oh, I'm going to move 9 people because you can't make it. I was like, yeah, no. I mean, that's normal, right? I don't know. But it would be the beginning of the relationship with the higher power. And for a long time, I used, you know, Ron M as my higher power. Then I used Mike R as my higher power. Then I used alcohol as my higher power. And then finally, when I got to Matt, you know, he was the last person I would use as a sponsor as a higher power. But I would start seeing like, wow, this is what it means to like have a higher power. You know, I need to treat, whether you call it God or whatever we call it, I need to treat that like I want to impress that higher power, like I want to impress Matt, or I want to impress Ron, or I want to impress Mike. You know? And so today, you know, with problems, I talk to my higher power about it, and I say it out loud, and I expose my fears and when self is trying to get too much cake at the party, you know, I expose that and I pray about it, and I turn it over, and I treat the higher power that I cannot see, that is up in the sky or wherever it is, like I would have called Matt. And I'm thankful for all those relationships today. And I, you know, I just, like last night I was in bed and I was like, you know, every night when I got sober, I used to pray. Every morning I used to pray. And I've gotten out of that habit. I haven't been praying at night. So last night I said, you know, dear Lord, thank you for this day. Thank you for keeping another day sober. Watch over us tonight as we sleep. Pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen. I did ask him to watch over us. Probably shouldn't have. Watch over us if you want. But it's that act of humility. Surrendering the thought. Especially now where I'm at a point where, you know, my higher power, I can't see. I have to have faith. I have to surrender and believe. And, you know, very lucky. I hope everyone's having a great day. Sorry for the time off. Hope get back into it and start avoiding having to say sorry the next day. See ya.